One of the hardest things about parenting in today's day and age is that it's incredibly isolating. And when we feel like we're the only one struggling in this way, or our sweet boy is the only boy who is behaving in this way, we start to feel shame and embarrassment and like we're a failure. And from that place, we can't create change. So I bring parents into community rather than try to pry and pull information out, to focus on using tools to build connection. One of the tools I talk about is special time.
Hello, parents out there. Mrs. Kimball here. And we are going to talk about getting angry today. Well, kind of the opposite of getting angry. I'm honored to host Asha Shore, who is all about helping boys resist the temptation to aggression. Thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you. Thanks so much for inviting me on.
So I think this is going to be fascinating because I know a lot of moms, especially as females, can struggle sometimes with the tempers and the aggression we see from our boys. And quite honestly, me as a mom of three boys and one girl, I don't know that it's necessarily gender specific. We see plenty of tempers out of all of our little people. So that's kind of what we're going to talk about today, is how we can resist our own temptation to aggression and discipline without punishment. Great. Tasha, I'm going to give you a proper introduction real quick so people know who you are. Tasha Shore is a parent, coach, speaker, and co-author of a book called Listen, 5 Simple Tools to Meet Your Everyday Parenting Challenges. Her other co-author is Patty Whistler, co-founder of Hand in Hand Parenting. So you're surrounded by parenting experts. Most importantly, I think, mom of 3 boys. She's a huge advocate for boys and their families throughout the world, and totally committed to committing lasting change in families by supporting parents to care for themselves, connect with their boys deeply, set limits lovingly, and play wildly. And that is the kind of change that's going to change the world. I love it. I love it, Tasha. Let's jump in. How did you become such an advocate for parents or kids? What's your story?
That's so funny that you ask, because it seems a little bit backwards. I actually started out as a pretty strong feminist women's studies major surrounded by political activism and feminism growing up in California in the Bay Area in the 70s. And I won't go into all the details, but essentially, you know, it was an exciting time to grow up as a girl. It was like anything was possible. We would go to rallies and I felt like, you know, I could take over the world and it was going to be awesome. And it was really just empowering is the only word, is the perfect word for what I was feeling. And I went off to college. I was a women's studies major. I loved it. You know, learned just all about women's power and the changes we created in the world, and just felt more, you know, more of like, okay, what else are we going to do here? Because we are going to make some serious positive stuff happen. Yeah.
Nice.
And life was just going along and it was great. And fast forward to, gosh, what was it? 2001, I guess, or it must have been 2002 at that point, beginning of 2002. And I was pregnant with my first. And I remember specifically laying on the couch and having this thought, oh my God. What if I have a boy? Like, it had never even occurred to me
that that was even possible in your future. Oh, that's too funny.
I mean, I grew up pretty much with my mom as mostly a single mom. And like, that was just my reality. I'm an only child. I just figured like, that's what you do. You have a mom and you do stuff and it's fun. I don't know. Girl power, right?
Oh,
so I was literally panic stricken. So what does a girl do when she's panic stricken? She calls her mom, right? So I call my mom and I say, Mom, what if I have a boy? Which is met by silence on the other end.
Uh-oh.
And then she goes, don't worry. We'll figure it out.
Ow.
And it kind of started there. And then it was like, I had a boy and another boy and another boy. And I had to somehow reconcile this sort of style of feminism also that I had grown up with, which in some ways placed sort of men as the bad guy. Not always, but there was definitely a sort of an energy about that. Mm-hmm. And then I had these boys who I loved more than anything in the world. And I had to figure out how to reconcile that. I had to figure out how do I keep loving him and allow him to grow up into somebody who I can be proud of, or mm-hmm. guide him to grow up into someone who I can be proud of and will help make the world a better place. And I mean, I just had to figure it out. I just was sort of thrown into it. Yeah. So that was the beginning of it. And there's lots more, but that's the beginning.
How funny that you ended up with three boys. And I can do math well enough to realize that not only do you have boys, you have made it through teenage boydom with one or two of those, hey?
Yeah, 13, 15, 17.
Uh-huh. Oh my gosh, your food budget must be enormous.
We just had that conversation at breakfast this morning.
No way.
Because my husband does the shopping and the cooking. And he was like, I cannot believe how much money we're spending on food each week. And I buy it and I go like, this is way too much. And like the refrigerator is empty.
Ooh. Oh.
Yeah.
So here's one thing I love. Because I think we have a pendulum shift a little far in the like no gender matters in mm-hmm. our culture. So I really appreciate that even though you came from this point of like women empowerment, girl power and all that, that you didn't just think, well, I'm going to now raise my boys to be like sensitive and feminine, that you thought, what are the differences? Because they're real. Mm-hmm. For sure, there are real differences. And I think we can see the joy in those and we can see the strength in those differences. And so I just really have to commend you for doing that and not, I think, falling into the trap of like, gender doesn't matter, we're all the same. So yeah. I appreciate that.
Thank you. I actually do get a lot of, I get hate mail about that. Every time I put something out into the world, people are like, you know, why is it only boys? And people really get their feathers ruffled around that. But my mission for my business is to create a more peaceful world, one sweet boy at a time. And it's not like so much that the innate gender differences that I focus on, it's more on how we respond to boys as we raise them versus how we respond to girls. I mean, there are definitely gender issues going on. And I know we're talking really binary here and there's a spectrum and I'm
sure
I get that. But when I look, for example, you know, this year, you know, my boy's high school was on lockdown and they arrested a boy with a loaded handgun in his backpack. Mm. Okay, well, you know, of course it's a boy. Sorry to say it, but nobody wants to say it, but there's an epidemic going on and it's not because boys were born bad and violent. So we need to look at it. We can't ignore gender. We need to look at what's going on.
Yeah, thank you. It is not because boys are born violent. It's because they don't have you yet. So I want to unpack something you said that we need to respond to boys in a way that fits them. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I guess what I meant is that we want to be aware of how we're being triggered by them. So for example, aggression is something that can be very challenging for moms to respond to in their boys because most of us have some sort of history of unwanted aggression towards us, whether that be, you know, sexual, physical, verbal. Most of us have experienced, you know, yucky stuff along the way. Some of it's huge and some of it's tiny.
Sure.
But oftentimes when we have boys, even if they're small, screaming at us at the top of their lungs or, you know, lunging at us with their fist, we get triggered and freeze or completely flip out. So again, not because of this little sweet boy who's having a little struggle right now, but because of the baggage that we're coming to the situation with. Mm-hmm. So I really work a lot with parents to understand, for one, to heal our own wounds so that we can show up fresh. And then two, to understand that there's actually a difference between the sweet boy. Your sweet boy is always in there. And then these behavior patterns that are glommed on top. So if he's, you know, punching or screaming at you or whatnot, it's not that he's bad. It's that he's struggling somehow and we need to figure out how to help him peel those behaviors off so we can get back to that sweet boy who's still inside.
Mm-hmm. That's just beautiful imagery of explaining, like, it's not about you. Don't take it personally, right?
Right.
So how do you teach moms to respond when a boy is acting out and is covered in all that aggression and hidden there? Are there specific step by step. My default emotion is anger. So I'm probably like abnormal for the female because I am the one who would like fight back or yell back. And then my boys are crying.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, you're not abnormal. Many of us do that. I mean, that's when we're scared, right? We might flee, we might freeze. We also might fight like hell, right?
Yep,
that's what we do. Anyway, so you're not abnormal. Tell me the question again. I'm sorry. I just spaced out on what you asked me.
Oh, yeah. No problem. So when our sweet little boys are acting out in that aggression, what kinds of things can we say or do other than our reaction of maybe fight, flight, or freeze, which we want, of course.
Right. Well, one thing that I like to emphasize is that, excuse me, it's not that I can just tell parents what to say, because without working on our own baggage that's causing us to get triggered in the situation, I could tell you 25 things to say, but in the end, when your kid calls you a bleep, you're going to totally lose it, right?
Got it.
So I'm very much an advocate of, you know, when you talked about the beginning of what I do, of caring for yourselves, right? And part of that, yourself, and part of that is being in community, because one of the hardest things about parenting in today's day and age is that it's incredibly isolating. And when we feel like we're the only one struggling in this way, or our sweet boy is the only boy who is behaving in this way, we start to feel shame and embarrassment and like we're a failure. And from that place, we can't create change. So I bring parents into community.
Nice.
And then I also teach a practice called listening partnerships, which there's a chapter on in the book. And there's essentially just a unique way of listening to somebody else without judgment, without offering advice, without trying to fix them. And so I facilitate parents being able to set up these partnerships with one another so that they can do that healing and show up differently. Mm-hmm. And then in the heat of the moment, I can start saying, here's what you can do in the heat of the moment. And you know, the crux of it is to listen, like the name of the book, right? Much more than you're talking, and to stop putting so much weight on your words in your limit setting. So, you know, a kid might be coming at you to hit you or kick you, let's say, and you say, you know, or his brother, let's say he's going to hit his brother, and you know, you're in the kitchen doing your kitchen thing, right? Mm-hmm. And you kind of see it through the corner of your eye, and you say, you know, stop hitting your brother, or don't kick your brother. And he keeps going, and then you yell it again, and then you threaten, and you say, you know, if you don't do that, then we're not going to have dessert tonight. You know, if you don't stop doing that, or mm-hmm. all these things. But the point is that his behavior is not changing. And so what I teach parents to do is to notice what's going on or what's not going on, and get rid of those practices like asking them to stop kicking over and over again that aren't working, and to actually physically bring a limit. So to stop it, to make stop happen, essentially.
Wow, that's very powerful, because I mean, how many times I watch it in other parents, you know, you hear other parents say, if you don't, then I will. And I think, they're not going to follow through on that. And then I watch the kid keep going. Parent says it. It's a story that plays out over and over, because right. I tend to see it in others. I almost can look at myself, you know, from like the scary movie thing where you're looking at yourself from above and like, oh my gosh, I just did it too. You know? So are there practices that parents need to put into place to like increase their sense of self-control? Because really, that's kind of good parenting, is like powerful self-control.
Right. Well, that's, I mean, essentially what I just said, the listening partnership is the main practice that I teach to do that, being in community. And then I coach parents to do something that is for them. So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, blabbing on about self-care. And I think, you know, as we're struggling with our three little kids or whatever, and people are like, yeah, you need to do self-care. It just puts this weight on us, and we feel like a failure because we can't get away to a spa for a week.
Yep.
And one more thing. I'm like, totally. Yeah, I'm like, no, that's not spa. So I put a premium on community care over self-care. Like, just being a part of the community counts as caring for yourself. It's a huge bolster. And then it can just be something little, like, you know, let's say you like to read you know, People Magazine or some trashy magazine or something, you know. All right, so you grab one and then you lock yourself in the bathroom for 5 minutes a day and you just, you know, gobble up some whatever story about some superstar. You devour some totally useless piece of news that might not even be true. Whatever, it makes you happy, fine, no judgment. Just do something that's not about, like, how do I parent well and what should I be doing and what's going on with my kids and what's wrong with him? It's too much.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I think being in moments instead of guilty about them is huge, right? This mindset shift. Because sometimes moms are like, you know, you might shuffle away and do that in the bathroom and then you feel like you did something wrong, right? Like you hurt your kids or something by leaving them alone for 5 minutes and, oh, like I shouldn't have done that. You know what I mean? And so then, like, that's not a worthwhile filling up your tank recharge moment. I feel like we have to just acknowledge, like, we need something to recharge our own batteries and that that's good and it's okay and it's helpful and it's productive for the good of your family,
it's
right?
Necessary.
When you look at it that way, it matters.
Yeah, it's necessary. I mean, it is the first step. When someone comes to me and their boy is acting aggressively and they're freaked out and they're trying to figure out what to do about it, I start with them.
Wow.
That's the starting point. I have to start there in order to have them be successful with stopping the aggression. If I just dive into, like, the aggressive moment, they're not going to have success. So I've learned that there is a path that works.
That's fascinating. Put your own mask on first.
Absolutely.
Everybody says it, but it's kind of hard to implement. So obviously when you're especially first starting out or when people come to you, they are seeing some failures, right? That even when we start trying hard, we have failures in our goal of being perfectly peaceful parents. So what do you tell parents when they've totally messed up? Like, whatever that looks like.
Right. Well, first of all, I say we're not going for perfection. It's an unattainable goal, right? We wouldn't expect it of anybody else, and we need to let go of expecting that for ourselves. I mean, that is just the main thing. And the other thing is to adopt some truths. And one of those truths is that you as a parent are doing the absolute best you can at every moment, and that has always been true. And yes, sometimes that best didn't look very good. Not for me, you know, not for you, and not for those of you listening to us right now. It's true for all of us. But that's okay. If you could have done better in that moment, you would have. If I could have done better, I would have. And even if that sounds sort of like, yeah, whatever, if you choose to believe that, life will go better. You will be less harsh on yourself. And the kinder you are to yourself, the better you're going to be able to show up for your speech.
I want to send a huge thank you to today's podcast sponsor, Hapsi. We are all about getting good sleep here in the Kimball household. And you know, if your kids are going to spend 1/3 of their time in a certain place, to me, that's where you prioritize high quality surfaces, non-toxic stuff, and organic. A lot of our mattresses here at the Kimball House are made by the Naturepedic brand. Great news, Naturepedic's sister brand, Hapsi, uses a lot of the same materials, is equally as non-toxic, and they are much more affordable. So that's the one I want to share with you today. Hapsi is GOTS certified organic cotton. They do not use glues and adhesives because they have individually pocketed springs, and they use GOTS certified organic wool, not polyester fill. And here's the big one when it comes to mattresses. There are no flame retardants. That is the big, huge risk when we go to sleep on a conventional mattress, that there are flame retardants that are proven to cause health issues in our kids' bodies and in our bodies, and they're breathing those in and being exposed to those all night long. Again, sleep is where we prioritize our organic dollars, and I would love to introduce you to Hapsi. Check them out at kidscookrealfood.com/Hapsi. That's H-A-P-P-S-Y. Huge thank you to Hapsi for being our podcast sponsor today.
If you choose to believe that, life will go better. You will be less harsh on yourself. And the kinder you are to yourself, the better you're going to be able to show up for your speech.
Nice. So a lot of just forgiveness and putting the past in the past and taking the next step forward. You use the phrase negative spiral in some of your writing. And I just, as soon as I read that, I thought, oh my gosh, like I can feel that happening in my yourself sometimes. You're just getting like sucked into the quicksand of thinking your whole life is going to H-E double toothpicks or whatever. And I can see it in my kids where like they just can't get out of, you know, a rough situation. I remember one time picking up my 8-year-old boy for, you know, dentist appointment. Ever. How was your day? It was bad. I said, oh my goodness, you know, what happened? It was interesting because he listed like 3 little moments, probably each 60 seconds or less, you know, as he fell down on the playground and someone kicked him on accident during soccer on the playground. And then there was one other thing. And it was so fascinating to realize that like in an 8-hour day, these 3 minutes had completely defined his day. And we talked about it and I kind of helped him be a little logical. And, you know, those were only 3 minutes. I said, can you tell me 3 things that happened today? And he did. And like the look on his face when I said, wow, it sounds like you actually had a really good day. You had a lot more minutes of good than bad. And he was like his whole kind of countenance opened up. So I'm assuming that's, I don't know, a negative spiral. Is that for both parents and kids? What do you tell parents to get out of that?
I mean, first of all, I think that's great. What you did is great. What I notice is that a lot of parents don't have little boys who are going to answer that question.
Sure.
In other words, like, how was your day? Or, you know, what happened that you're feeling?
Nothing. I don't know.
But I think that would probably be the most common response, more common than being able. I mean, it's amazing that he can do that or he could do that in that moment.
I'm very fortunate in that way.
Yeah. And a lot of times that's just not what, you know, parents are getting. Mm-hmm. And so what I suggest is rather than try to pry and pull information out, to focus on using tools to build connection. And so one of the tools I talk about also in the book and also in my Reconnect, which we'll be talking about, is special time. And it's essentially just a unique kind of one-on-one time that can be used either reactively, sort of, okay, this is a challenging situation, let me offer this some connection, right? Like offer this type of connection right now. Or it can be proactively used as a plan in your parenting. So it's scheduled throughout the week. And so your child knows to expect it.
Nice.
And that's just something super practical that parents can do.
Nice. And special time is, can you like sort of give a definition of what that looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. So special time at its core is one-on-one time that you spend with your child where you name it. Doesn't have to be special time, but you could be call it whatever. You name it, you time it, and your child gets to do whatever they want. So they lead. And your job is to follow their lead, pour in your love, be present and undistracted. And that really is a turn on the head of what they're experiencing, like 99.9% of their lives as children, where we're saying, you know, get your school bag together and finish your food and, you know, pick up your room and do your homework and all the things that we're constantly sort of, you know, don't hit your brother. And we're constantly dictating this, do this, don't do this, do this, don't do this. And this really flips that on their head and empowers them and gives you a window into what's really going on. So for a child who doesn't come in the car and answer the question, you know, what happened? Special time is a way not to be used in a way to kind of like get that information out.
Right.
It's a sort of a byproduct is that once that child feels connected to you, they can either then answer that question or, you know, outside of special time, or it just kind of comes out. They might play act it out. They might just share it with you in special time, because in special time, you're not trying to convince them to feel differently or pry them about what happened. You're just listening.
Yeah. So no agenda.
Right.
No parental agenda.
Yeah. And they can sense that. So they need that extra safety in order to be able to really come out and tell you what happened.
Nice. Now does this have to be a half hour to an hour? Because I can see parents cringing like, oh no, can't do it. I've
no.
Whatever.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Yeah, no, not with 6 kids and probably not with 1 kid if you're new to it. So regardless of the number of kids, it's definitely quality over quantity. I tell parents that when they first start special time, when they're first learning about it, they've never done it before, start with 5 to 10 minutes max. Because it's harder than you think. We multitask way more than we can admit, want to admit, do admit, whatever. So it's actually, our brains are not, are trained at this point to be distracted. Like, we have to practice being able to purely focus for those 5 or 10 minutes. Like, my job during special time with my boy is to just look at him. You know, I'm not, I don't have to be all sappy, like, oh, you're the best thing ever, I love you. You know, that's not what I mean. But being present with my body, you know, the way I'm holding myself, I'm relaxed, I'm smiling, I'm just enamored with him, perhaps noticing things about him that I don't notice when I'm taking care of my other 5 kids and, you know, cooking dinner at the same time or checking my work email or whatever it is that I'm doing.
So no phones.
Yeah. So no phones.
Get it out of the room, moms.
No, no phones. No, like, okay, I'm cooking soup, and so I have to kind of like keep my ear out and make sure I don't hear the pot overflowing. No expecting the doctor's call that you've been waiting for a week. You know, not expecting, you know, the UPS package or whatever to arrive. If you know that you're waiting for a package and the doorbell might ring and you need to answer it, that's not a time to do special time. Because during special time, if the doorbell rings, guess what you do?
You have to sit with the special. You stay with the child.
That's right. You ignore the doorbell.
Oh, wow. So, yes. I mean, yes, that's hard for parents. I think especially for, like, women, we do tend to value busyness, kind of wear it like a badge of honor. So, good and important challenge, though, Tasha, for sure.
But, you know, can I just, I'll tell you just a short story to illustrate how powerful just a 5-minute special time could be.
Good. Yeah, please.
So when my kids were little, my boys were little, like, I had to get all 3 of them out of the house by myself in the morning, and it was a bit crazy. And I figured out that I needed to get up before everybody else woke up and get myself completely ready. Otherwise it was just total disaster. And like, I've given up a lot as a parent, but my shower, I have never given up. I shower every day, and I'm proud to say that. I need my shower. That's my self-care. It's like, I have hot water on me. I can do just about anything else for the rest of the day.
Funny.
So I'm in the shower, and one of my boys wakes up, and he comes in, and he comes to the shower, and I don't remember what he said anymore, but he was just like, it was just like grouchy and yelling at me. I can't remember what he said. And I was like, whoa, what's going on? And he just sort of kept yelling and being short. And I honestly don't even remember the topic at this point. And I said, hey, you know, I wanted to just kind of bark back at him, but I caught myself. And I said, you know, hey, how about, you know, you sneak back in your room, because the 3 of them were in the same room. You sneak back in your room and, you know, get yourself dressed and ready. I'll finish the shower. I'll meet you in the living room, and we'll have 5 minutes of special time before your brothers wake up. So he was like, okay. So he did, and I finished my shower. We met in the living room. I set the timer for 5 minutes, and I'm like, okay, you know, we got 5 minutes, sweet boy. What do you want to do? And he's like, I want to make baseball cards. I said, okay, let's do it. What do? He's like, you go get the paper. You know, I'll get the pencils. Okay. So I did, you know, what he said. I got the paper. I came back, and then he said, you know, you draw something or other, and I'll draw Babe Ruth, and you know, or you write this, and I can't remember exactly, but he told me what to do or whatever. But the point is, the timer ran at 5 minutes, and we had this like beautiful Babe Ruth baseball card all done.
Wow.
And he was feeling super connected, and we had an amazing morning. Like, I got them all out of the house, no sibling rivalry stuff. It was just a smooth, smooth morning, all from just 5 minutes of 100% focus in on this boy who woke up, as we would say in layperson's terms, the wrong side of the bed.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. My mom actually has started following you since I shared your stuff with our like Kids Cook Real Food members a couple months ago. And she'll like dash me an email every so often. Be like, hey, Tasha talks about special time. It's just 10 minutes. Like, so she's like giving me advice. And she'll like forward your emails to me and like, just thought you might want to see this. She's told me too that like, you know, I know like so-and-so, a young mom, like, has this 2-year-old who's just like, it's like a total tantrum. So I've been passing Tasha's stuff on to her. So
aww, yeah, I love your mom. Tell her thank you. Tell her thank you.
I will. But you know, it's simple ideas, not always easy to implement. It definitely takes intentionality. It takes self-control and training, and like you gotta commit. But 5 or 10 minutes to make the whole morning or the whole day or the whole afternoon, whatever, go so much better. I think that's awesome. I hope that some of our boys out there are going to say, Mom, let's go cook.
That would be awesome.
Carrot.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, definitely they do. We've done many fun cooking things during special time, including making green cakes. Ooh. And all kinds of stuff. So it's like, and sometimes the cooking experiments turn into absolutely inedible things. So you got to be prepared for that too, because you can't say like, oh, no, dog food doesn't go in cakes. You have to be like, oh, awesome. All right. What else do we put in?
Oh, my goodness.
Which is, by the way, why the timer is kind of important, because you can't really be thrilled with that for hours on end. But for 5 or 10 minutes, can you let it go?
Mm-hmm. Do you ever find, I can just see some of my kids being distraught at the end.
Yeah.
Do you ever find like kids have trouble with that? Is there a strategy?
Yeah, absolutely. And some kids really have a lot of feelings come to the surface at the end of special time, and some kids don't. And as you start doing it, you learn kind of what kind of kid yours is. Not that it's always one way or the other. Sometimes, you know, some days are like that and some days aren't. But in general, some kids struggle with it more than others. I like to just tell parents to see it as an opportunity, because we won't have time to get into all of, you know, the details of what I teach, but essentially I see the release of emotion as where the healing takes place and how behaviors shift. So one of the things that special time does is it builds closeness between the parent and the child, such that the child feels safe to really be able to show you any hard feelings, not necessarily towards you, but just like big emotions that are pent up inside. And so just the timer going off, or like the sort of that letdown or the disappointment of it being over, of such the sweet time, you know, the sweet time being over, can absolutely be enough to bring up feelings. And that's okay. You know, getting back to the boy thing, it's like, we need to create safe spaces for our boys to be able to feel feelings that we've labeled as feminine, things like disappointment and sadness and all of those things. That's how emotional intelligence grows. Mm. So I say, plan for it. Don't try to avoid it. Don't try to make it not happen or tiptoe around it. But just the first time you do special time, you know, have 20 minutes, set the timer for 5 minutes, so that if there is an upset, you have time to just be present and listen. And the tool is actually called Stay Listening, the way that I teach parents to show up and listen. It's another chapter in the book, but
yeah,
essentially you're staying and you're listening. It's not rocket science.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, I mean, to me, honestly, that's revolutionary to appreciate a child being distraught, because my reaction has always been, guys, come on. Like, if you can't end having something fun, we just can't do things that are fun. This is ridiculous. So
Yeah. Probably
in retrospect, not the best situation that I've created. So I, to me, like, my neurons are firing. I'm like, oh my goodness, I think maybe I can do this. I just have to remember it. Go brain, go. You mentioned you don't have time to cover everything, but I think 10 days would be a good amount of time to cover a little more. Tell us about, you just took 12,000 families through your 10-day reconnect called Parenting Boys. Please catch us up on that.
Yeah, so I do this a few times a year. We've got one coming up. I run it live. It is super fun, and there's so much amazing energy in our Facebook group. What it is it's a 10-day mission to reconnect with your sweet boy. So everything that I do is based on connection. And if you're seeing behaviors in your boy like aggression that we started off talking about, or an inability to cooperate, or a lack of flexibility, like, for example, they have to have the blue cup or they're not going to drink their milk or whatever it is. Anywhere that they're
really... Who's nodding out there? Yeah,
exactly.
Everybody's got something like that.
Yeah, so when you see those types of behaviors, connection is what he needs. And so what the 10-day reconnect does is I guide you through how to build that connection, how to rebuild that connection so that the behaviors shift. And the shifting of behaviors kind of feels like a bonus at the end, kind of. But what we do is you get an email every day for 10 days. You join a Facebook group. This is all free. I put prompts in there every day. I'm in there live. I do live coaching sessions most days, if not every day. Just depends how it goes, how I set it up. Every time I do it a little bit differently. It's just amazing. There are parents from, I think, most countries in the world in there.
So cool.
And it's super empowering. Like we talked about at the beginning, how the isolation can kill you. So, you know, if you're sitting at home feeling ashamed or embarrassed or hopeless or worried about your boy because he's acting aggressively or because you're getting calls from school or there's sibling rivalry that's going on that just won't let up. These are the kind of things that rebuilding connection with him in this way will help solve. So yeah, if you want to join me, please hop on in. We would love to have you.
Absolutely. And we will definitely have a link to the 10-day reconnect anywhere we share this video. I love it that, I mean, I just said like, go brain, go, like, remember this, because it's so hard to listen to a half hour conversation and like actually implement, but like 10 days of practice, now we're starting to train some habits. And I just think that's so powerful. I can totally tell that people benefit.
Absolutely.
That's awesome.
You know, there's lots of, you know, you'll see like challenges online, you know, the 5-day challenge, this, and people think, well, like 10 days, that's too long. And I'm like, you know what? I get that it's long, but parenting is like, it's no sprint. We're in it for the long haul. And that's how many days I need you to get you your wins. So if you can hang on for the 10 days, you're going to get these amazing wins. And if not, then that just means you're not there yet. That's okay. In a few months when I do it again, you can come back.
Absolutely. I just did the math. 6,570 days from birth to age 18. 10 is not that much.
You just did that right now?
Well, on a calculator.
Wow.
On my computer. I can multitask, Tasha. Come on.
That's amazing. I could never do that.
Well, out of 6,700 days, 6,500 days, sorry, I think 10 is not much of a sacrifice at all to lay this foundation, because no mom likes dealing with aggressive boys. No mom likes feeling like she's failed when our reactions are not optimal, right? And I don't think boys like being aggressive and acting out and feeling disconnected from their parents or from their siblings. That's all like very sad, and they're not going to grow up to be the beautiful person that they were created to be. So, you know, we can, I love what you're doing. I'm so, so, so happy. And boys are different than girls. I have to share one more story. I remember reading something when my now 8-year-old was like 3 or 4, like time with eye contact with a parent before age 5 is like optimal for child development. I was like, oh, like eye contact. Oh my goodness. So I get down on his level. I'm like, hey buddy, how you doing? And he tackled me.
Yeah.
I was like, yep, that's kind of how it goes. Yeah. So like you said, it's not sappy. It's their choice during special time. If they want to tackle you, just eat it up.
Exactly. Exactly. Love that. I love that story. It's a great story. It's like, hey, I'm ready to play. And yeah, that's an example, right? So you could get angry, you could be taken aback, right? Or you could take it as an invitation and just, you know, have some fun.
Yep. I just had to laugh about it. What would you tell parents in like a just last 60 seconds, something they can do today that's super actionable to change just a little shift in their parenting to get things kicked off?
Something that they could do today. Well, you could do special time if you got enough information here to start that. So you sure could do that. But I would actually suggest that you take 5 minutes and do something that makes you feel like a person, like a human being. Like, forget about being a parent for a moment. Take 5 minutes. And what is that thing? Is it a walk around your block? Is it calling a girlfriend you haven't called in a long time? Is it reading a short article in a magazine? Is it sitting down with a cup of tea? Whatever. Just one short thing that's for you. Because we, as mothers especially, most of us take care of the world. Mm-hmm. Right? We're taking care of everybody all the time, and we're running on empty. And it's going to be impossible to succeed at helping your sweet boy overcome the challenging behaviors that he's showing you if you are depleted. So mm-hmm. The one thing that I would say do today is go take care of yourself.
Love it. That's your homework, ladies, from parenting expert Tasha Shore, who I'm so honored to host today. Thank you so much, Tasha.
Thanks again for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Healthy Parenting Handbook podcast. I hope your brain feels fed and your heart feels full and that you feel connected, knowing that there are other parents on this journey with you. We're just trying to raise healthy, independent adults. And you know, the next time you think, man, there is no handbook for this job, Now there is the Healthy Parenting Handbook. Look up the podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please leave a review, my friends, as that helps other parents who need this information to find us. And of course, subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. That's a huge help. You can also look for our shorts as a reel on Instagram at Katie Kimball Kids Cook, or subscribe to the Healthy Parenting Handbook Shorts channel on YouTube. You'll get those bite-sized portions of healthy parenting advice.